Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has repeatedly warned lawmakers that the U.S. could be unable to pay its bills and default on its debt, possibly as early as next Thursday. After President Joe Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy met on Monday, both expressed some optimism that a deal could be reached to raise the debt ceiling and avoid an unprecedented default. McCarthy talked to the media earlier today.
Now we have the highest debt at any time to American history. So I just think it's common sense, it's reasonable, and it's rational that we spend less next year than we spend this year. Every household would do this.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre responded at today's White House press briefing.
During President Biden's first 2 years in office, he cut the deficit by $1.7 trillion. Now, folks, that's a record. And in March, he released a plan that would reduce the deficit by another nearly $3 trillion over 10 years.
The Biden administration wants to close tax loopholes and raise taxes on billionaires and has offered to freeze federal spending at current levels. Speaker McCarthy says a spending freeze doesn't go far enough. What would it mean if the U.S. hit the debt ceiling? It's uncharted territory, and you could join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What should a deal on the debt ceiling look like? Or hang on, should there be a deal on the debt ceiling, or should it just be passed and talk about spending cuts later? What questions do you have about how we got here and what it would mean if we enter this default? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Koplovich is a professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's nice to be back.
All right, let's talk about the stakes here. First of all, if we end up at this point, Congress doesn't vote to increase the debt ceiling and next Thursday apparently comes along, what starts happening then?
So we don't necessarily know. You know, the debt ceiling is something of an artificial cap, right? There's a law on the books from 1917 that places a nominal cap on how much debt the United States government can issue. And that's the sort of thing that has been raised dozens of times over the years as we hit the cap because the economy grows, the population grows, the size of government gets bigger. In the last decade or so, it's become much more politically controversial with political polarization, and it's been used in this sort of, you know, high stakes negotiation linked to the budget. But we don't really know, right? On some bigger picture level, the United States government, as issuer of the dollar in the global economy, has no trouble borrowing and issuing its debt. It's just a law that says we can't issue more debt. But Congress has already authorized a level of spending. Mm. So we're in this weird position where the president is now put in a position of, do I honor the laws that have been passed that say we should, you know, send money out the door to pay the bills of the United States government, or do I honor this other law which says we can't issue any more debt?
Right. If it's that latter and we can't pay everything we owe, the U.S. federal government, I mean, I've seen some nightmare scenarios. We're defaulting on debt, collapse of the international financial system, list goes on, or bits and pieces. Okay, maybe Social Security recipients don't get all the money that they get. What are some of the different options there?
It's not a sort of instant cliff, right? Mm. So the Treasury Department would have to start prioritizing which bills do we pay first and whatnot, buying and selling securities and things like that. There's a couple things on the table which have been dismissed by both parties as sort of gimmicks which the government could possibly do, right? So there's another law which gives the Treasury Secretary control over coinage in the United States in any denomination they want. And so according to that law, the U.S. Treasury could mint a platinum coin, give that to the Federal Reserve, which deposits it in the Treasury's account, and suddenly we would have $1 trillion to pay our bills.
It seems kind of like a silly way around it, and maybe an inflationary way around it. I don't know.
It's silly in that it's sort of gimmicky, but it is, according to the letter of the law, it is legal, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing that could happen is the debt limit applies only to the principal of U.S. government bonds. Right, so there are different denominations of bonds and, you know, amounts and interest rates. So there's a type of bond called perpetual bonds where the U.S. government could issue bonds and say, we're never going to pay off the principal, but we're only going to pay the interest. And if people bought those sorts of bonds, suddenly the U.S. government would be able to finance its debt indefinitely as well. That's another thing which sounds gimmicky, but according to the letter of the law, is legal. And then we have the constitutional option, which is the 14th Amendment that people have been talking about. The Section 4 of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution says that the validity of the public debt of the United States shouldn't be questioned. Right. And this was passed during at the end of the Civil War, during times when people were worried about, the North and the South fighting afterwards about whether Confederate debt should be honored, whether Union pensions should be paid and things like that. So it's also possible that President Biden could say the 14th Amendment obligates me to ignore the debt ceiling. And then we would have a legal fight that would go towards the Supreme Court. But regardless of what's going to happen, it's not going to be suddenly next Thursday. The U.S. is going to default on all of its debt and we're going to have a global financial crisis.
Now, the idea of negotiating over the debt ceiling, President Biden had started this process saying we shouldn't negotiate over the debt ceiling. It is a must pass thing. We could talk about our budget later. Right. The argument from Republicans now and some others is, OK, if we take the idea of reducing the annual deficit, slowing the growth of the debt as a good thing. This is the only time. This is the only leverage there is out there to make concrete cuts. If we leave it for the normal budget process, which doesn't exactly exist anymore, we're right. never going to do it.
Right. Yeah. And both parties over the years have used this for some leverage and linking it to budget concessions and things like that. It's really new in the degree to which the Republican Party really seems to be threatening actually going through with default. On the one hand, you can say we're not going to negotiate. On the other hand, if President Biden is not going to negotiate and there's not a deal, again, he's going to be faced with this choice of doing one of these other things to prevent default, which gets either into legal constitutional debates or involves some of these other gimmicks, or there's actually going to be a default. Right. So it seems unlikely to me that the White House is going to allow a default to happen. It's not clear, given how far apart the parties seem to be, that there's actually a negotiable agreement that's going to pass both the House and the Senate. So we are in somewhat uncharted territory in that people are realistically discussing some of these other things that are kind of more gimmicky and different than in past debt ceiling negotiations.
Talking to Mark Koplovich, professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison, looking at the debt ceiling, what is happening with that, negotiations on and off in Washington now, what happens if a deal isn't reached? Let's go to your calls at 800-642-1234. Greg is with us in Lake Geneva. Greg, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
So my question is, if there's a default and other people lose services, our Social Security, the veteran benefits, blah, 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 are these politicians still going to be getting paid? Do their paychecks stop? Do their benefits stop? Or do they have nothing on the table?
That's a good question. And again, the federal government has lots of bills to pay, and there would be some decisions about the order in which those bills would be paid. But again, to the caller's question, right, I think it's very unlikely that what's going to happen is President Biden is going to say Social Security checks aren't going to go out the door and federal employees are not going to be paid. So to me, it's really a question of which of these options, which are more or less politically popular as ways to make sure we don't have the default, actually pan out. I think, it seems an extremely low probability event to me that we get to the point where the government is not actually sending out things like Social Security checks and funding Medicare and whatnot.
Greg, thanks for that call. That said, if we are in this position, somebody who expects to be paid by the federal government won't be. Who decides that? And if I'm that party, whatever it is, am I going to go to court and say, hey, put me in the front of the line?
Right. Again, it's a question of how long this drags on, right? It's not suddenly people are not going to be paid in, the first 24 or 48 hours. If we really got to a point weeks from now where the government really said, all right, we're defaulting on our debt, There might be rushes to the courthouse with U.S. government bondholders. There'd probably be a lot of protests if we were talking about the things the caller asked about with Social Security or Medicare. But again, I think what we would see is action by the White House to make sure that the government is able to serve its obligations. And then the legal fights about this would actually be about the constitutionality of something like minting the coin or something like invoking the 14th Amendment, not legal fights about whether people were actually going to get paid.
Thanks for that call. Joni is with us now in Eau Claire. Joni, hello.
Hello there.
Hi, what did you want to ask
How are
about?
You? Have some concern about, okay, in the prior administration, there was cuts for the billionaires, the extremely wealthy, and why, I guess I have to say the Republicans are really fighting, you know, raising the tax on billionaires when they were given cuts before. You know, what is the deal there? What is behind that other than political reasons? I mean,
I gotcha, Joni. Thanks for the call. And people have pointed toward the Trump era tax cuts, and people have also gone back to the George W. Bush era tax cuts, temporary, that you don't, they didn't take them back away. They don't seem to be on the table for Republicans, as Joni says.
Right. Yeah. So look, both parties, when they are in power, tend not to be very concerned about debt levels and deficits. Mm-hmm. And when they are in opposition, tend to state that they are much more concerned about debt and deficits. So that's more pronounced, I think, in the current episode, because the last times the Republicans had unified control, you had the big, the TCJA tax cuts in 2017. And so one possibility mathematically to solve this problem is to let those tax cuts expire. That's obviously off the table for political reasons. And again, as a political scientist, I look at this less as sort of, you know, how sincere is everybody about their concerns about being fiscal hawks and concerned about debt and deficits, and what are the political incentives here? And so the political incentives for the Republican Party right now, as you said, are to use this moment as leverage to get things that are effectively budgetary policies and involving spending cuts, which are their political priorities. And obviously retaining the tax cuts and making sure that the cuts are going to come on spending is a top political priority. The other thing that McCarthy and the Republicans have said is that all of the spending cuts are going to come from non-defense discretionary spending. All right, so Social Security cuts are off the table, Medicare cuts off the table, and defense spending off of the table. That is the lion's share of the federal budget, right? So then you're concentrating whatever budget cuts would come in a notional deal. They're all coming in social welfare programs, education spending, and kind of everything else that's a small share of federal government spending.
Thanks for that call, Joni. We're talking to Mark Koplovich from UW-Madison, political scientist, expert on public affairs, looking at the fast-approaching federal debt limit, the ongoing partisan debate surrounding it, and the potential economic consequences if no agreement can be reached in time. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see come out of this? Do you want to see spending cuts? Do you want to see some tax increases? Do you think the debt ceiling should be off the table, not subject to negotiation in the first place? Call 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Mark Koplovich, professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison, looking at the ongoing political negotiations to increase the federal debt ceiling and what happens if that doesn't happen soon. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Mark, before we go back to our callers, there are concerns that the people who rate investment worthiness of different institutions, including countries like the United States, even if there's not a total collapse here, they might look and say, okay, we're putting these investments, these debts at risk. Does this make the U.S. less trustworthy?
Right. Yeah, look, so investors hate nothing more than uncertainty, right, in global finance. And so if every time we get near this debt ceiling now, given our domestic politics, it looks like we're going to have these episodes of walking up to the brink of default, you can imagine that credit ratings for the country would go down relative to other investments, which are seen as more safe. And again, on some level, that's not an actual assessment of like the U.S.'s ability to borrow. We can borrow in more, you know, amount-wise and ease more than any other country in the global financial system. But we're one of only two countries that has one of these debt ceiling laws that runs us up to this this nominal limit. So we could abolish the debt ceiling law and never markets wouldn't worry about the U.S. defaulting. We've never defaulted in our history, et cetera. But as long as we have that law and you're going to get up to a cap every year or every 2 years, then there's some concern you go over it. And you could imagine that would ultimately affect our credit rating relative to Germany or France or Canada or other countries where that's not going to happen.
Let's go back to our callers now. Lisa is with us in Madison. Lisa, hi. What did you want to bring up?
Hi, I had a question regarding Biden invoking the 14th Amendment to address the debt. And as you just stated, obviously, this would go to the Supreme Court. And with this Supreme Court, wouldn't that open the door to other aspects of the 14th Amendment being undermined, namely like the Equal Protection Clause and what that implies then for the federal government's ability to make sure that states are being impartial in how they deal with people?
So I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know exactly the answer to that question. My sense is the case as it would make its way through the court system would be specifically about Section 4 of the 14th Amendment and the validity of the public debt. So conceivably, you could have legal cases that were more broadly about the 14th Amendment as a whole. But what I've seen so far in discussion of the types of things that would make its way up to the court is specifically the clause that says the validity of the public debt shall not be questioned.
Thanks for raising that question. Laura is with us now in Twin Lakes. Laura, hi.
Hi. A couple questions, actually.
Oh. We got a bad connection there, Laura. I'm sorry. Laura, our producer says, was wondering about the debt ceiling being raised under the Trump administration. I assume it came up a couple few times over that 4 years.
Yes. And, you know, again, it's sort of politically predictable in many ways that when the same party controls Congress and the presidency, you don't get these fights. Right. And you don't get these public debates about we're spending too much or that the deficit and the debt are too high. So you get this when you have divided government. Right. And this is one of the perils of our presidential political system where you have competing claims to legitimacy. And so you have a Democrat in the White House and you have Republicans controlling the House of Representatives, both elected in national elections, both saying they have mandates from the people to, you know, spend or not spend or raise taxes or cut spending. And so you tend to only get this type of brinksmanship when you have divided government. But again, what's new about this current fight and the 2011 fight in the Obama administration is, you know, what seemed to be really credible commitments to actually follow through with a default from the Republican Party. And that's something that is actually very different, that we would put the full faith and credit of the United States government at risk over political differences about taxes and spending.
Thanks for that call. Phyllis is on the line now in Clark County. Phyllis, hello.
Hi. Yes, I had a similar concern. Janet Yellen was being attacked by a politician this morning, a Republican politician, who was saying that she wasn't telling the truth and she didn't know her business. Yet it seems as though they believed her when they were dealing with Trump's deficit issues. I'm just wondering why that happened, that she was seen as reliable back then and not now.
Phyllis, thanks. She was in a different position at that point, but Mark, your thoughts.
Yeah, so, you know, she was the chairman of the Federal Reserve, the central bank, in 2018. So she was nominated by the president and approved by the Senate and then sort of independent central bank head. So was more insulated from politics. Now she's part of a Democratic presidential administration as the Treasury Secretary. I'm not sure exactly what the caller was referring to, but, you know, she's been asked several times about, are you planning for what's going to happen with default and questions of that variety. And my sense with that is the answer is yes. And the Treasury Secretary and the president are having very clear conversations about what would happen. But she's also not going to get up in front of the microphone and candidly admit these are the three steps that we're going to take if it actually follows through next Thursday.
Thanks, Phyllis, for the call. Mike is with us now in Spring Green. Mike, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question regarding, I guess, discretionary spending. If a budget deal isn't passed, is the ag program, the farm bill, part of discretionary spending? And would that be in jeopardy if a budget isn't agreed on?
I mean, with the budgetary process, you know, the Congress very often, as Rob mentioned earlier, doesn't meet deadlines for the budgetary process. And then we get continuing resolutions which keep spending for a temporary period of time at a certain level. So, you know, assuming that there is some resolution to this debt ceiling brinksmanship, then I think you get into that prolonged budget process, in which case programs like that are not going to be zeroed out. But we may have future budget showdowns and temporary shutdowns like we've had very frequently in the past under divided government.
But that farm bill wouldn't, or the farm funding part of the government isn't untouchable in the categories you laid out there. It's not in those Medicare and Social Security. It's not defense spending.
Right. No, I mean, in theory, nothing is untouchable. Mm-hmm. But it's just sort of the public statements of the Republicans that the cuts are all going to have to come from the non-discretionary spending. But it's not a dedicated endowment fund like Social Security and like Medicare. What are called as entitlements.
Thanks for that call. Mark, just a minute for a big question here. You'd think, hey, divided government, Democrats in one branch, Republicans another. Hey, that's a time for compromise. As we've learned here in Wisconsin, it doesn't always play out that way.
No. And, you know, when you have a set of political institutions where both parties can get elected, right? And we have that again in Wisconsin as well, where the Democrats tend to do very well recently in the statewide elections and not in the legislative elections. You get both parties willing to dig in more because they feel like they don't have to compromise to get reelected. So if Kevin McCarthy is very worried about retaining his speakership because of divisions within the Republican caucus, but he's not facing the electorate for control of the House for another year and a half right now.
Mark, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me back.
That's Mark Koplovich, professor of political science and public affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He was with us today for a look at the ongoing negotiations to increase the federal debt limit and what happens if Republicans and Democrats don't reach an agreement.